All right, I'm going to ask you a series of questions. Just relax and answer them as simply as you can.
Novum on Jam, Dundee University's radio. I'm Ari Brin.
Can there be a peace between us?
Peace. No peace.
What is it you want us to do?
You might recognize that clip. It's from the movie Independence Day, directed by Roland Emmerich in 1996. If you haven't seen it, the clip maybe tipped you off that this is a movie about the invasion of Earth by very hostile aliens. These aliens don't come in peace. They come to colonize Earth and annihilate humans completely. This week's episode of Novum is all about the alien invasion of Earth. This is one of the most common themes in all of science fiction. It spawned hundreds of books and films. It's a subgenre that strikes an emotional nerve with people, and it hasn't done a lot to quell the anxiety of actually encountering an extraterrestrial intelligence. Maybe people at SETI are pretty angry with these movies. Today, I want to explore the invasion tale, from its very origins to its more modern incarnations. What I want to explore most? We're humans. We're the top of the food chain, the most advanced, most intelligent species. What happens when we suddenly aren't? There's much more about the invasion of Earth to come on Novum. That song is from Jeff Wayne's epic musical based on H.G. Wells' The War of the Worlds. Wells' novel was written in 1898, during a craze of invasion literature. It seemed everyone in England was writing and warning about surprise attacks from abroad. And this was a fear at this time, and the fear would soon in some ways materialize. But The War of the Worlds was one of the first novels to ask, what if our invader came from outer space? Beyond that, what if they were totally alien, in both appearance and culture, and felt no duty or empathy towards us? Hold on. Orson Welles, no relation to the author, puts it a lot better than I could in these selections from the opening of his famous 1938 radio show.
We know now that as human beings busied themselves about their various concerns, they were scrutinized and studied, perhaps almost as narrowly as a man with a microscope might scrutinize the transient creatures that swarm and multiply in a drop of water. Yet across an immense ethereal gulf, minds that are to our minds as ours are to the beasts in the jungle. Intellects vast, cool, and unsympathetic regarded this earth with envious eyes and slowly and surely drew their plans against us.
Well's creatures come from an advanced old civilization on Mars. They've been watching us for some time, observing our habits, our weaknesses. Why? Well, their planet is crippled by age and drained of natural resource. And they are extremely jealous that the lush resources of Earth are wasted on such primitive creatures as ourselves. It's a pretty shocking idea, especially to audiences of Wells' time. But more so is the appearance of the Martians. They're not humanoid. These Martians are composed of little more than a giant brain, huge saucer eyes, and tentacles in place of limbs, giving them the appearance of an octopus. Make no mistake, the Martians are supremely advanced. In fact, their species has progressed to a point that they're totally reliant on technology and pretty useless without the aid of their machines. And their machines are almost indestructible. The Martians possess heat rays, which smother everything that it touches. A death ray that vaporizes human flesh in buildings, whole cities, and a black smoke that suffocates. How could humans stand a chance? It's a pretty dismal outlook, and undoubtedly it's how early imperialist with guns, cannons, and even primitive chemical warfare must have appeared to colonized people. Well, luckily here, which wasn't always the case, the disease aspect is flipped on its head here. The Martians in H.G. Wells' story hadn't prepared for bacteria, against which Earth inhabitants have developed an immunity. What human technology can't touch, the smallest agents of Earth's ecosystem are able to destroy. So, reliant on technology, useless without the aid of their machines. Hold on. Doesn't that sound a bit like what humans might one day become? I've definitely seen this on a shirt somewhere. The evolutionary scale that has us becoming more and more upright and then ends with us slouched over a computer. And Wells was exactly of this mindset. He made this hypothesis of future human evolution pretty clear during his time, publishing stories and even scientific texts extrapolating on what one day we might become like these Martians. The War of the Worlds is a pretty keen satire of the invasion genre altogether. Wells' novel had a huge impact on science fiction. It's hard to find an alien invasion movie that doesn't bear some relation, although some ignore the more intellectual facets of the novel.
Yes, it came from outer space to fill the world with terror, to bring you unforgettable suspense. What was it? Where did it come from? Who were the all-powerful creatures it brought from outer space? And what did they want on Earth?
That film, called It Came From Outer Space, is just an example of one movie during the 50s to pretty much make a disaster movie where everything's destroyed, women scream, but with an alien invader. We can make many arguments regarding the sheer number of films that took inspiration from Wells during the mid-century. Why were there so many of them? I guess there still are to this day, but back then, was it a fear of the unknown, of another world war breaking out? Of human civilization being lost in an instant? On a more shallow note, any of these films would make for a great cheesy movie night. Take your pick. There's Invaders from Mars, Earth versus the Flying Saucer, Quatermass, and of course, Kronos. And some are more worth your time than others, but let's slow down a bit. We still don't have enough foundation to talk about these adaptations in modern invasion films. We can't move on until we talk about Two Planets. Two Planets. That's the name of the book by German author Kurd Laßwitz. It was published a year before War of the Worlds, but it didn't have the same direct influence on English-speaking science fiction, simply because it wasn't translated into English until the 70s. But it definitely deserves a mention here. Two Planets has a very similar premise. A super advanced species of Martians land on Earth. From there, the two books diverge entirely. Firstly, the Martians are humanoid. Seriously, they're kind of sexy, and they can pass for humans. And there are interspecies love affairs. Secondly, they come in peace. The Martians don't want to kill anyone. In return for just a bit of solar power, a few resources, they're willing to spread their vast cultural and technological knowledge to the backwards, savage inhabitants of Earth. What could go wrong? So, weirdly enough, the human race doesn't react that well when they find out that these enlightened aliens think they're a bit dumb. And an initial cultural misunderstanding ends up with Englishmen injuring two Martian civilians. Mars is infuriated, and it creates propaganda that dehumanizes Earthlings, and especially the English, as violent savages. And it all goes downhill from there. The Martians can't fathom why humans wouldn't be grateful for their governance and guidance. And the once peaceful aliens install an autocratic dictatorship on Earth. They begin exploiting Earth's resources, taxing humans, and forcing all humans to attend mandatory education. It's a fascinating look at how the best intentions of colonialism can go awry. With these two novels, we see common themes that continually reoccur in the alien invasion story. The imperialistic aliens portray humans as savages to justify colonization, and as animals to justify extermination. This dehumanization is so effective, and it's been used throughout our history to justify colonialism of people deemed of lesser development. Can we really blame these aliens for doing the same thing? And science fiction often intends to draw these parallels, but in the end, it's up to you whether you're convinced by them. So now let's travel a bit within the world of the alien invasion. In the next part of the show, we'll be talking about some of the most famous invasion movies. We'll get back into Independence Day and into Tim Burton's cheesy and weird Mars Attacks. To remind listeners that we have a Facebook page. It's www.facebook.com/NovumPodcast. This is a brand new show, and the page is just getting up and running this week. But after the show concludes, I'm going to be posting plenty of resources there, including a list of songs that we played today and links to books or movies that I've discussed over the hour. So please post suggestions or comments there. I'd really love to hear from you. This is part two of the episode, where we get into depth on two semi-modern invasion films. They're actually from the same year, 1996. Apparently a great year for invasion films. The first is Independence Day, and the second is Mars Attacks. I'm assuming a number of you have seen Independence Day. If you haven't, it's a little like Love Actually, set during the alien apocalypse. An ensemble cast of strangers whose lives are drawn together and forever changed by an alien invasion. Basically, Warcrafts park over the major cities of Earth, New York, Los Angeles, London, Moscow. They focus mostly on the American cities, After a short time, the aliens demolish these cities, wiping out millions of innocent people. The destruction is unbelievable. But there's no time to cry. There's no time for any emotional response to this enormous tragedy. And let me tell you, in the movie, there is no emotional response. The people of Earth get to work. They mobilize. But militaries don't stand a chance against the alien fleet. Their spaceships have impenetrable shields that our nukes can't get through, let alone bullets. This movie is undoubtedly inspired by the War of the Worlds. The aliens are dependent on technology. Not only do they rarely leave their personal war vehicles, but they're encased in an artificial exoskeleton, even when they do get out and walk around, which is very rare. And yeah, they have the death ray that vaporizes whole cities and leaves them looking like a crater.
They knew exactly where and how to hit us.
And our forces?
We're down to 15%. If you calculate the time it takes to destroy a city and move on, we're looking at the worldwide destruction of every major city in the next 36 hours.
We're being exterminated.
Human morale could not be lower. Luckily, the dream team of Will Smith and Jeff Goldblum come to the rescue. Will is a starfighter pilot. Jeff, a mad computer scientist. Together, they devise a solution. Okay, Jeff mostly devises it, but that will save all mankind. This solution? An obvious nod to Wells' novel again. Take a look at this clip. As a preface, Jeff has just asked a soldier to try to shoot a Coke can off of an alien ship. They own this one for testing purposes. You should watch it to... I can't explain here. But the soldier can't get through. His bullets won't go through the shields. Warning, in this clip, there is the sound of a gunshot.
We know that already. What's your point?
Right, my point is, if we can't beat their defenses, then we gotta get around them. Major, one more time. Anytime.
How did you do that?
I gave it a cold. I gave it a virus. Computer virus.
Yeah, they give the aliens a virus. A computer virus, just to clarify. I thought it was a nice twist, and one example of how knowing your science fiction history can always give insights into modern films. So one of the main things I'm interested in while watching an invasion film is, why are they here? What do they want? Is it our resources? Is it our labor? Is it simply the joy of killing that we can't culturally comprehend? It could be anything. But I feel like there's got to be something. Independence Day barely offers a rationale for why the aliens invade. In a throwaway scene, the President of the United States has a moment of psychic connection with an alien and sees their master plan. Kind of like that scene in Lord of the Rings. Maybe you know the one I'm talking about. But suddenly he sees that they are a race that go from planet to planet, slaughtering the inhabitants, consuming all the resources, and then they move on. This was a very short scene. I like this movie, but that's a little thin. And considering that Wells wrote The War of the Worlds in the 19th century, it's nothing new. The invasion genre has the potential to be so much more. It can be a statement on what humans may one day become, or what we have already done. All right, here's one movie that drains all the intellect from the invasion story, for better or for worse. The movie? Mars Attacks.
Professor, what do we know about them?
We know they're extremely advanced technologically, which suggests, very rightfully so, that they're peaceful. I suspect they have more to fear from us than we from them.
Ladies and gentlemen, the
Martian ambassador is going to say a few words.
Come on down, Mr. Ambassador.
Whoa.
That's a Martian? That's gross.
My God.
Yikes.
Okay, quick note there. Why they're saying ew is because the Martians look kind of ew. They are an exposed brain and look like a skeleton with big eyeballs. You should check it out online. The computer graphics are really not that great, and it's very surprising that this came out the same year as Independence Day. Mars Attacks is a Tim Burton-directed parody of all those 1950s sci-fi flicks that we were talking about earlier. And it skips the rationale altogether. Maybe I missed it, but I watched this yesterday and I didn't see a shred of rationale here. Suffice to say, the Martians are pretty much psychopaths. They intend to slaughter everyone on Earth for no reason whatsoever. For fun? We have no idea. We don't even know what they do with the Earth once they get it. That quote by Pierce Brosnan's character, the scientist, just want to point that out for a minute. I really liked that line because when they see all of these alien crafts hovering and surrounding the Earth, the military advisor wants to immediately nuke them. And the president, played by Jack Nicholson, turns to the Pierce Brosnan character. And Pierce Brosnan says, well, we know they're intelligent, so necessarily that must mean that they're peaceful. And I'm not really sure where he's getting his data from this, but it is quite an interesting, it points out an interesting thread in invasion literature and movies. Most often the invaders are more technologically advanced than us. That's how they obtained their vehicles to travel across space. But very rarely are they less violent. So I can understand why this is such a cult classic film. It's got charmingly bad special effects, in my opinion. Politicians act stupidly. American Congress is massacred to humorous effects. Sarah Jessica Parker's head is surgically attached to a chihuahua. So if you like that kind of thing, go check it out. The movie's primary reasons for existence is to squeeze in as many celebrity cameos as possible, and they get quite a few of them in there. If we choose to ignore the many faults of this film, Mars Attacks occupies the space in between the War of the Worlds and Two Planets. Obviously, the Martians wish to slaughter humanity with their ray guns, but on a more subtle level, they disdain human civilization for its ignorance and naivety. Even after the Martians kill hundreds of humans and heads of state, they're still invited back to speak before Congress. Humans blame themselves for possibly committing cultural offense that provoked the massacre. Humans, right? I mean, we need some self-esteem. And in the third and final part of this show, I'll bring up a few unconventional invasion stories that don't really fit with what we've talked about so far. We've reached the third and final segment of our show today, the unconventional invasion. And there are plenty of tales that don't fit into the traditional invasion narrative, and there's plenty of different routes that I could take here. And most of them I don't have time to get to. So I've just chosen a direction, and I'm going to focus on just a couple in the next 10 or so minutes. So I'd say naming these following stories as alien invasions doesn't quite cut it. The name seems like a simplification. Take District 9, a film from 2009 directed by Neil Blomkamp. In an alternate 1982, an alien mothership comes to hover over Johannesburg in South Africa, much in the same visual way as in Independence Day. But there's only one of them. So similarly to many invasion narratives, the aliens come from a dying planet. But these aliens, known as Prawns, don't want to conquer us. They arrive as malnourished, sick refugees. They wish to take shelter on our planet. And a lot of the film is in this documentary style segment. And in this, in the beginning, we're shown that South Africa created a refugee camp for the Prawns. And over the 30 years that the aliens have inhabited South Africa, the camp has become a slum. Weapons trading, interspecies prostitution, and I won't do the whistling sound here, and decay, it's rampant. The aliens appear as impoverished, dirty, and undesirable to the surrounding human residences. It's extremely problematic, and a large corporation is hired to forcibly relocate the Prawns out of Johannesburg. Just as a side note, we don't really know why the Prawns picked Earth. We don't know how they got here, how they knew about us. These questions aren't answered, but they don't seem particularly relevant to the story that District 9 is trying to tell. So you might be thinking, District 9 is not really an invasion film. Yeah, aliens come to Earth. Yeah, we don't really want them here, and they're technologically advanced. But they don't have imperialistic objectives. They look like insects, and they pee on their own property. No way could they ever usurp humankind or take over Earth. But while humans consider them disturbing and pathetic, they are invading us. The main human character is infected by a biological agent that slowly changes him into a prawn. AKA, he stops talking like this.
And behind me, you can see other alien affairs workers. And what we do here at this department is we try to engage with the prawn on behalf of MNU and on behalf of humans.
And he starts talking like this. Again, an oversimplification of the plot. District 9 is a unique take on the invasion tale. Because an invasion can happen not only to our civilization or our planets, it can happen within our bodies. And it can be the most terrifying and disturbing type. Okay, take the famous scene from the Ridley Scott movie Alien. I'm going to describe a bit about this scene in case you haven't seen it. If you really hate spoilers, haven't seen it, don't want to hear about it, it is quite disturbing, then please listen away, as they say. In this scene, a facehugger alien has attached itself to a human male. This happened a while ago. And it has presumably deposited something into his mouth. Later on, the facehugger has detached itself and everything seems fine and dandy. The crew of the good ship Nostromo is having dinner. Then, in the middle of the meal, the man starts convulsing and before you know it, right out of his stomach, burst the alien child. It's one of the most famous scenes for a reason. It's extremely horrifying because Alien is a tale about impregnation in a way, and that is a take on the alien invasion story. Perhaps it's not the invasion of Earth, but the unwelcome, uninvited invasion of the alien into the human body. We, not any earthly matter, nor the sun or the water. But we are the resource. And in many films and books, aliens need our bodies to reproduce. In some cases, they would die without us. Though there are plenty of science fiction stories in which aliens invade Earth for access to us. And I'm thinking about a couple examples here in literature. I think Arthur C. Clarke is one author who has especially written about this premise. Maybe you've seen 2001, where aliens don't invade, but they take a special interest in us and help us along to the next phase of human evolution. And a book of his that really is about the alien invasion, but sticks to a lot of those same themes, is his novel Childhood's End. In this novel, benevolent overlords come to Earth and hover over Earth in their spaceships, just like in many other alien invasion literature. Perhaps it was an inspiration to those. This book was written in the 50s, I believe. And they exert control over our worlds. And they do this for our own good, they say. They stop human wars and they forcibly stop some human behaviors such as bullfighting. But in a way, they are very interested in controlling our culture and making us a non-violent species. And of course, they're not just doing this in, you know, the name of goodness. They do have a reason. And you should read the book to find out exactly what that is, but if you've watched 2001, you'll get a sense. A second book is Dawn by Octavia Butler, in which the Earth is on the brink of destruction. There's been a war, and a select group of humans awake on an alien spacecraft where they've been kept in stasis for 250 years. And the aliens have saved these humans from the destruction of our world, which, that sounds like a great thing. But the survivors have no choice but to mate with their rescuers if they wish to return home. And these descriptions don't scrape the surface of these books. I wish I could do these examples more justice, but you'll have to read them. They're both fantastic, morally layered books that ask a lot of questions about colonization, and I would definitely recommend them. So, ending a bit early today again. I definitely need a few more shows to get the timing right, but I want to say a few things in conclusion. It's tough to be confronted by a superior intelligence, and I really wonder how humans would respond if they found out they were considered primitive by another species. I wonder how I would respond. But stories like the one mentioned ask us to consider, what is primitive? Is there a hierarchy of intelligence at all? And if we expect aliens to accept our shortcomings and not to interfere with our moral dilemmas, can we accept and not interfere with others? To colonize is to take away a civilization's prerogative to change and act, however violently, on its own. This is a complex issue. In some books, human civilization comes out smarter and more unified after an invasion, like Two Planets. We take their technology, what we've learned from them, and the Earth is unified because we know that there is more out there than our petty differences. So maybe it's not all bad. And maybe, one day, if we're the ones out exploring the universe, we'll come across a civilization that looks like ours did 1,000 years ago. Will we help them? Will we interfere? What would you do? Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode of Novum. I'd love it if you left a comment on our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/NovumPodcast. And you can find us there, and please let me know. I'm Ari Brin, and we will be back next week with more.